My name is Troy. Let me get my notes open. And I'm a believer who struggles with finding my value in people's approval rather than Jesus's, deep fear of abandonment, self-rejection, feeling like I don't belong, and like a victim of my life circumstances. Hello. I had to struggle with this last time. All right. We're talking about lesson 13 tonight, admit. And learning to practice principle 4, to openly examine and confess my faults to myself, to God, and to someone I trust. And then actually doing it in step 5. So we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So I shared my story for the first time here on November 24th, 2008. It was just over 2 years ago. And tonight is my second time. And it's not because I've had a successful 2 years. I'm here tonight actually because I didn't admit some things along the way of my path of my daily life and have paid a healthy price. So let me start lesson 13 by catching up on my story first and then leading up to these past 2 years. I was born and raised in a single-parent home in Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City. And I said this last time, and I'll say it again, it still stands true, that what happens in Vegas does not stay in Vegas. It goes everywhere you go, as I have found out. So my mom was a blackjack dealer for 24 years, and I was in and out of the casinos a bunch. I had a sister that was 6 years older than me, and the three of us loved each other, but my sister and I had a fairly detached relationship. My mom and I were really close, but I felt very insecure about being a mama's boy. But without a dad in the picture, that was really the only course of connection that I had in my life. My sister had a different dad than me, who my mom divorced a few years ago, before I was born, but she kept his last name. A few years after my mom divorced my sister's dad, my mom had an affair with my dad, but they never married. He was actually married to another woman at the time with 3 children of his own. And so the next 16 years of my life were emotionally rough. My mom had 5 boyfriends that kind of just moved in and out of the house that she fell in love with. And first there was Fitz. So Fitz was the closest thing that I ever had to a father figure growing up. The problem was he never stuck around for more than a couple years at a time. And so after he continued to come in and out of my life each time, it was an ache and a heartbreak in my soul. After Fitz was Chuck. Chuck beat my mom up and put her in the hospital with a broken rib and massive bruises all over her face. And my mom's face was so badly beaten that when I went to visit her in the hospital, I didn't remember or I didn't recognize her. And I actually was told that story. I was 12 years old and don't recall seeing her. Next, there was Glenn for a few months. Glenn used to sell fish from a chuck and play catch with me in the street. And it's the only time I remember a man playing catch with me in the street. And those were really good times. And the next thing I knew is that he was gone. And next there was David. And he sat me and my sister down one night to share the news that he had decided to leave my mom. And my sister cried and screamed and stood up and threw a ring. And I just remember sitting back, wondering, confused, hurting, silent, hopeless, helpless, fatherless, and just not knowing that it was okay to hurt and it was okay to let somebody know that it was hurting me. But when I was 16, I met my biological dad for the first time, along with my 3 new half-sisters. Simply amazing when I saw him, because it was the first time that I saw somebody that I looked like. I couldn't believe it. It was an amazing, surreal experience. Shortly after meeting my dad, it was obvious that he didn't like who I was. He could build a house from scratch. He hunted, fished. He was kind of a man's man. And I was raised on putt-putt, chick flicks, and soap operas. And which is probably the number one reason why I'm sitting up here today. So he didn't like me, and I didn't like me much either at the time. And so the last man that came into my life was Doug, and he had 2 sons within a year of my age. And that was a real cool deal because for the first time I had these brothers, and I felt like a kindred spirit, but the health of those relationships went south for the winter real quick with what you're about to hear. My mom was in love and married him in my junior year of high school, the first guy that my mom married in my lifetime. And I liked this guy because he actually seemed to like me. And he stuck around. But not for long. The same old story continued. They married and divorced within 11 months. And in my junior, senior year of high school. I thought that I was unacceptable, that I was unlovable, that nobody wanted to stick around and be my dad. And I thought it had to do with who I was. It was eating me alive and I needed somewhere to turn. I couldn't run to my sister. because she often thought that I was a nuisance and a sissy, which is typical of older sisters, I would assume. My mom was emotionally distant and didn't know how to relate to a little boy because of her vicious upbringing in a horribly unhealthy home, and did everything that she could to make sure that I wasn't anything like the men that she connected with. All the men in my life kept coming and going, and I needed somewhere to turn, somewhere to go in my pain, somewhere to scream about my pain. So I turned to women. I turned to drugs, drinking, stealing, and anything else that I could do to numb my pain and just find value and acceptance in this lonely, dark little existence of mine. However, at the end of my junior year, I broke out in extreme acne, and I had that problem until I was 28 years old. I'm 36 now. And it crushed my spirit to its breaking point, because the one thing that I was holding on to was that I was cute and girls liked me. But that was stripped away real quick. And so my life would just begin to fall apart, and major drugs, drinking, and immorality just marked my life for years. So what do you do when you walk in immorality and don't know what else to do with your life? You join the Air Force. And so I joined the Air Force in 1992, and because I had no other idea of what to do in my life, that seemed to be what men do, is they join the military. So I did, and it was there that God had a plan for me, and Jesus Christ grabbed my heart in a radical way. And there was this guy named Rob Palos who was in a different squadron, just began to share the love of Christ with me. But the cool thing about it was, is he didn't just share the gospel in terms of scripture and verse. He began to love me and care for me and respect me. And he actually liked me, even with my vulgar self-hatred that just kind of oozed out of me in every single which way. And it was the kindness of God that led me to repentance. And my life was just radically night and day changed. I had hope, life, and peace for the first time in my life, but the hurts, habits, and hang-ups, as many of you are experiencing here today, were all over me, kind of like the Cowboys losing season today. I had to put that in there. So I continued to try and find my validation through women and had a series of unhealthy relationships for the first 7 years of my life with Jesus. It was crazy because I had hope and life and Jesus as my best friend, the best friend that anybody could ever know. And yet I continued to struggle with depression and self-hatred. It just continued to work its way in my heart. So here's the major problem. I never admitted this along the way. I never admitted this to friends. I didn't even know how to put labels on what was going on inside of me or in my heart in order to be able to admit. All these feelings remained bottled up inside of me. But this bottle had bursted, and it was continuing to burst in many different forms and fashions all over my life. And it just didn't seem like that was the thing that was going on inside of me. The cycle just wouldn't end. And so it went something like this. I was hopeful and joyful with the Lord, and it still goes something like this, by the way. Joyful with the Lord, and then someone doesn't respect me or like me, or for whatever reason, or I just don't do well at something. I just don't succeed and excel in the way in which I wanted to. And then I feel angry or slightly resentful, but then I turn that inward. I must be the reason I failed. I must be the reason that that person doesn't like me. And rejection and fear of abandonment sets in. Then I withdraw from everybody emotionally, even though I'm physically present, Mr. Outgoing, and I'll talk to you, but I'm not there. And I have a serious episode of verbally destroying myself in my house. I don't know if anybody does that. And then it turns into depression and suicidal thoughts, and I'm thinking I'm a nobody, a nothing, a failure, a moron, and I'm just no good at life or relationships. Lord, please take my life because it's just too painful to handle. I can't tell you how many times I've prayed that prayer. I stay in that cycle for a few days to several weeks, and then it reverses. The Lord extends his kindness to me, encourages my heart with his word, and through prayer, I slowly come back in joyfulness and hopefulness with the Lord. And then within a few days or a short few weeks, the cycle begins again. The list of feelings were endless, and the cycle of finding my value and significance in people continued, and deep fear ruled my heart and my life. This led to serious codependency, a codependency that was kind of obscure and kind of incognito because I didn't come off as though I really needed you. I came off as though I didn't. But inside, I was hungering and aching for you to need me and want me. And there it is. Desperately seeking the acceptance of others is what this led to. Wanting to control my life to self-protect. Emotional isolation from others. A demanding spirit. An unhealthy need for attention. A steady feeling of rejection from others. A consistent sense of God being disappointed in who I was and disgusted with my actions. Unrealistic expectations of others. and myself. Depression, deep discouragement with my life, and self-hatred. All these things marked me as a result of the way that I was not allowing God to take over and admit along the way my daily struggles. So it was a vicious and unrelenting cycle that wore me out in every single way. And I rarely admitted this to anyone, even though it was going on inside of me. I was ashamed of being ashamed. I was embarrassed to be embarrassed. I was scared to tell a friend that I was codependent with that I'm codependent. And so I shut up. I shut up. And the more I shut up, the more the cycle blew up in my life. And so here's where I wanted to catch you up on my life story. I went through CR for 1 year, and I led a group for another year to deal with this endless cycle in my life. And the Lord made great strides in my heart. I was radically healed in so many ways. And I wept for the first time and finally grieved those six men that I knew that I loved and I missed. I just never knew it was okay to cry. And so my men, the first year, ended up seeing me cry about week after week for the first several months. And it was a refreshing feeling to be able to be who I am. But this is where I need you guys to kind of just pipe up. Because in the beginning of 2009, I began to slowly stop admitting. I slowly began to stop admitting on a daily basis when I was feeling lonely or afraid or insecure. It's one thing to admit all of your past. It's to come in here and just kind of unload and throw up and get all of it out on the table. But it's another thing altogether to confess and admit daily how you're feeling, how you're struggling with depression or suicide or body image or whatever it may be. Admitting the small stuff matters. And that's the one thing, that little cliche line that I might want you to come away with tonight. Admitting the small stuff matters. Because if you don't admit the small stuff, it becomes sin stuff, is what I like to call it. So why learn to admit your past? Why learn to continually admit your present and after CR, just continuing to admit? Well, I want to share a personal story, as though you haven't heard plenty of that already, of the past couple of years. Well, I was on staff here for Watermark for 4 years, and I was pastor of our apartment outreach ministries. And for the first 3 years, it was a struggle, but the Lord was growing me and using me and doing some pretty cool things that I was very encouraged to be a part of what God was doing. But in that last year, some really deep insecurities and fears were working in my soul. I began to envy the staff's gifts and their giftedness and their ability to articulate and be always on and say the right thing. And I began to be intimidated by them. And I slowly began to drift into self-abasement. I also began to deal with discontentment and a thankless spirit. I was not satisfied with how the Lord was using me. And the results weren't real successful in my mind. And so success and comparison began to work its way into my heart. And that's how I was trying to gain self-value. Again, it came through self-deprecation. And so I decided to bottle this up again, which I wish I had learned the first time around. And I decided not to confess this to my Watermark coworkers. And admitting the small stuff mattered. But slowly but surely, what started off as simple insecurities and fears and disappointments, discouragements that all of us in this room experience and face, developed into a sinful pattern in my life and into a sinful heart. Proverbs 29:25 says that the fear of man will prove to be a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be kept safe. I kid you not. A couple of months ago, I came into my restaurant. I saw that the wood floors were wet and warped. I'm a general manager of a restaurant, 10 Star. Come on out. It's a Preston Northwest Highway. I didn't realize that one of my employees had accidentally shifted a drain hose, and over the next few days, the hose dripped one little drop at a time. Until one morning I came in, and the wood, just a very large section of it, was just warped and wet, and you stepped on it, wood just water just kind of came out. Well, that's exactly what happened to my life. Because I didn't admit the small stuff to the staff and my coworkers of what was going on inside my heart, the slow drip of sin into my life had taken its toll, and the foundation of my heart was all of a sudden warped. Proverbs 24:33-34 says that a little sleep, a little slumber, a little laying of the hands to rest, and your poverty will come on you like a bandit, your scarcity like an armed man. I no longer was the one calling the shots. As a result, I began to look for value in other places and ended up in a relationship that became physically inappropriate. After a period of time, I decided to finally confess this to Watermark staff, but I only told half the truth. Again, I was ashamed to be ashamed. 3 days later, I shared the remaining pieces after first confessing, but it was too late. I had really broken some trust with Todd and Jeff and Kyle and all these folks that loved me all these years. After a few days of praying and processing together, Watermark and I both decided it was best for me to step down from leadership, step off of staff, and allow time for my heart to heal. I wanted, as a result of that, my heart just fell apart. And I want to read from you October 10th, 2009, from my journal for you. This is what I wrote. Wow, my life has taken a serious turn. My sinfulness has caught up to me. Here's a few bullet point of events. August 31st, I confessed to my community group what was going on. September 3rd, I confessed to Kyle and Jeff on Watermark staff. On September 8th, I confessed to my ministry and all my directional team and 40-plus leaders. On September 10th, I confessed to all my leaders and my teams. On September 17th, I came fully clean with Kyle and Jeff about the half-truths and lies that I had been communicating along the way of confession. September 19th, I had to back out of my friend Ashley Marie's baptism, who's sitting here tonight. On September 21st, Watermark and I decided it was best for me to step down from leadership of Watermark. On that same day, September 21st, I shared with all my leaders again about the lies and the decision to step down from staff. On September 22nd, I confessed and shared with all the Watermark staff, weeping for several minutes. October 6th, last day at Watermark and Apartment Life staff. October 7th, I had to back out of conducting one of my best friend's weddings, Jen Manilaeus and Michael Bombach. And when I told Jen on the phone, all she did was cry for literally 10 minutes straight before we could actually even talk about the problem. On October 2nd, Todd gave me an encouraging reference in spite of the character defect he was seeing in me and to the job I now have. October 8th, I accepted the general manager position at 10 Star. October 18th, I started my one-year commitment at 10 Star. Lord Jesus, I don't know which way is up right now. Help, help, please. I've lost my girl, my job. I've lost tons of privileges and opportunities. I've hurt so many people. I've lost whatever self-respect I had. I'm lost. I need you, but I am so, so far away from you, and I have little idea of how you and I will ever be really close again. So that's why you admit the small stuff. That's why you admit the small things along the way before they become sin things. Here's a few other reasons, if that wasn't a dramatic enough story to kind of get it. Number one, God promises freedom. Proverbs 28:13 says that he who conceals his sin does not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes his sin finds mercy. I liken this freedom to the free-flowing blessing of God's hand in and on our lives. Just this past Thursday, literally last week, just after we closed the restaurant, all of our kitchen drains became clogged. I don't know if you've ever smelled that. It is not something you want to get a good whiff of in the evening. So we tried for an hour and a half to unplug these drains to no avail. So the emergency plumber and I hung out till 3 o'clock in the morning. And after we went to the main line, we found the stoppage. He ran a little snake through that line. And as he ran it through and got all the gunk out, the water began to freely flow after chunks and junk and grease, nastiness and smell of nastiness was just kind of flowing out. It became clear and clear and clear. And finally, there was a free water flow. And he kind of said something interesting that I thought was profound. He said, it's the flow of the water that tells you everything. It's the flow of the water. No water flow equals trapped gunk. Dirty water flow equals developing clogged with gunk. A clean water flow equals no gunk. Well, that's exactly what happens to us. Yeah. David says in Psalm 32:3-5, when I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. And you forgave the guilt of my sin. When you stop admitting every time, during or after your time here at CR, when you're in sin or in pain or in grief or whatever's going on in your heart, then the water of Christ in your life will stop flowing. The clog will begin. And here's the scary thing about it. It takes a while. And you don't know what's happening. This little clog had been happening for years at the restaurant. And that's exactly what goes on in our lives and our hearts here in this room. And the water of Christ stops flowing in your life. you will begin to walk in another level of guilt, another level of isolation, another level of loneliness, fear, you name it. Whatever it is, it multiplies it and it divides and it conquers and it goes and it rules in your life. The freedom you had will be gone and it will dissipate slowly before your eyes and you won't notice it. Then one day your heart is from God and you're trapped in your sinful little clogged hearts. Now I want you to pause really quick and catch this part. My story is pretty dramatic, and there's a ton that I kind of left out. I had to cut a lot of pages out of this deal. But many of you in this room never walked in what we call big sin. You're the type whose sin is wicked like mine, but it's externally controlled. You follow the rules. You're a rule follower. You possibly grew up in a Christian home and have never done drugs or drank excessively or have been physically inappropriate in your life, and I just want you to stop. Because the freedom I'm talking about is not the freedom of everybody else perceiving you as free. I'm talking about the kind of freedom that you feel and experience yourself. I'm talking about the kind of freedom that when you come clean with the small and the big stuff, you're free. You're free. You got to continually admit to maintain your freedom. Two, God promises to heal your heart. James 5:16 says, confess your sins one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. On Tuesday, October 12th, just a few weeks ago, Todd and Kyle and Jeff and a few others just kind of invited me to come to staff prayer almost exactly 1 year ago from the time that I was first confessing my sin. And I had to give an update of how this, I wanted to give an update of how this past year had been. I was able to admit for the very first time, this is just a few weeks ago, to the entire staff that I feared many of them, that I was intimidated by them, that I was envious of many of their gifts, and that I began to hate staff prayer because I was so scared of saying something stupid and moronic in the middle of a bunch of men and women that I highly respected. And that I was in this middle of this wrestling match for the whole year, and I just collapsed under the pressure. And I just wanted to let them know how this year had been of God growing my heart, how this year had been a wrestling match, and how he had made me to become a lot more comfortable in my own skin. And how I'm much more myself and who I am and confident in the Lord using my gifts to build his kingdom rather than depending on vicariously living my little codependent life through others' experiences. So let me tell you how the Lord has brought healing to my heart since admitting my fears to the very people that I feared, not somebody else. And the insecurity that I had inside my soul with them was simply amazing. I don't have to put up a front anymore when I come up to this little building to say hi to everybody. I can actually be me. I can actually say that I'm not doing well and not fear that they don't see me as spiritual and holy in the way that I want to be perceived. I want to be valued and significant. And that thing has got to transfer over to Jesus Christ and who he thinks of me. And so the trust that I lost a year ago with Todd and Kyle and Jeff and many others has been restored. And you want some of this. You want the trust to be regained in your life. You want to be able to set trust yourself. And so the third and last thing is that you invite, and this is the coolest thing about CR that many of you are experiencing right now, is that you invite support, intimacy, and safety when you begin to admit. 1 John 1:5-9 says that God is light and in him there is no darkness at all. If we claim to have fellowship with him and yet walk in the darkness, we lie and do not live by the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. And the blood of Jesus, his son, purifies us from all sin. You ever notice that when you're hiding fear or hiding your insecurities or sin from others that you feel really far and distant, detached from other folks? You ever notice that with the Lord? Do you ever notice that when you finally decide to come clean and you share your fears and insecurities with others, what happens? I remember when I admitted to Watermark staff just a few weeks ago that many of them walked up to me and gave me a hug and said some very kind and meaningful things. But one of the most meaningful things that a few of them said to me is how much they related to what I was saying. How many of them kind of felt a little bit of what I was feeling. And they were so glad that somebody said it out loud. And they told me that they struggled in similar ways and felt moved to act in their community groups to ask if any small stuff needed to be admitted. So my admittance developed, one, safety for them to share with me. Two, intimacy with several of them that had been lacking before. And three, support for many of them. They were in my corner rooting for me to walk deeply in intimacy with Christ. Y'all are an amazing group of people. You know, I was just thinking about this and how the majority of the American population wouldn't dare sit in a room and confess their life junk to one another. You're in a room filled with people ready to admit their pain and struggles consistently in order that you might find healing, that you might find hope, that you might be reestablished in trust. I just got to tell you, don't let the enemy steal your joy. Don't let him set up camp and roast marshmallows in your little heart, because that's what he will do when you don't admit the small stuff. It will become sin stuff. Don't let him destroy the confidence that you have. Don't let him destroy your relationships. Don't let him destroy you. You're too valuable. And the small stuff in your life, admitting it matters. So thank you guys for allowing me to admit my story to you today.